greetings and welcome on board a recorded segment for our Best of WDKOK's On the Mark segments. As many of our segments and the Best of segments are, they are new interviews that we've conducted with individuals who are in our community, in our U.S. community, who are making differences. We try to speak to some of the change agents in our nation when we get a chance. A few years ago, we spoke to Holly Curl. Most folks will remember that because she was hard at work keeping the Stop Street Harassment movement alive. And at that time, street harassment was really gaining a foothold as something that had to be brought up and talked about. At that time, a board was formed. And on the newsline with us now is Lauren Perez. She's the Outreach and Training Program Manager at the Domestic Violence Resource Project in Washington, D.C., has several years of international gender and women's empowerment studies and work, is on the Stop Street Harassment Board. She holds a master's degree from the London School of Economics in gender and policy. So, Lauren, thank you so much for calling in this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Stop Street Harassment movement is kind of always bubbling in the background. We are aware when Stop Street Harassment Week is held. What is the status of the Stop Street Harassment movement? Tell us what's happening from a board member's perspective.
Absolutely. So I feel very privileged to be on the board of Stop Street Harassment. It's definitely something that has picked up speed in the last couple of years. In fact, we just finished our 9th annual International Anti-Street Harassment Week. And this is something that we are so proud to be a part of. It has become an international movement in which we see women across the world, Australia to Uganda to India to the U.S. and Canada, sort of speak out about the fact that street harassment happens and it's not okay. I think we're so very quick to assume that street harassment is something you can brush aside. Oh, it's just catcalling. Oh, nothing actually happens. And in fact, it's part of a larger culture that allows things like sexual assault to happen. And so when we start addressing things from the ground up, from street harassment up, we can really make a difference. And so this year we've launched our fourth wave of PSAs in Washington, D.C., which for me is a very personal experience. And so you see it on the metro, you see it on buses, you see it at bus stops, basically saying, stop and help people if you see it happening, or say something if you see something, which is a really powerful call to action. We've also just finished a survey on street harassment in which they basically found out that 70% of women have experienced it. And not only that, we did it by age, and we found out how early women and girls start hearing things on the street and how it affects how they grow up and how they picture themselves and how they sort of expect to be treated in the future. And those are some of the really big things we've been doing as a board this year.
When a young woman or girl is walking down the street, or any woman or girl is walking down the street, and there's a catcall or somebody yells something, or a man stands in front of her to impede her path or something like that, somebody might think of that as incidental. But what is really happening? What's happening to the woman? And what is this symptomatic of when it comes to the male sort of not respecting her? What's really happening when that incidental occurrence takes place?
It's all a part of a culture that we're creating, right? It's telling a man, the abuser, whoever's saying this on the street, that this public space is theirs to own. It's all about power and control, ultimately. This is true of sexual assault. This is true of domestic violence. This is true of street harassment, is that it rarely is about getting that person to react to you in a positive way, right? You assume catcalling is a sort of type of flirting or saying like, hey, smile. And that's never the intention. The intention is not to get someone's number to go out on a date. The intention is to intimidate and to make them realize that this space is not theirs. It's telling women that they don't belong in public spaces. And so while it might seem incidental to a passerby, to the woman, it is reinforcing things we hear in every aspect of our lives, in boardrooms, on the street, in schools, wherever we are, we're being told, you don't belong here, this is a man's space. And catcalling is just symptomatic of that.
What does the man need to know that he doesn't know when he does that? I mean, I guess respect is just the first word for it, but what else?
I think it's important to understand just how scary it can be. And I'm not sure every single person who catcalls understands that. Because a lot of time what you hear if you bring up catcalling is, well, it's not that bad. Like, it could have been so much worse. But it is so scary, right? And you're always asked, well, why didn't you respond? Why didn't you say something back? And then you think about recent news pieces, like that student, Ruth George, who was murdered in Chicago. And she was murdered because she ignored someone's catcalling advances. And that's the sort of thing where it can escalate so quickly, and not everybody understands that. And so I think as a male ally, what's important to realize is that catcalling can be as serious as murder, even though it seems trivial. And so I think it's the scare factor that we really don't take into account.
Right. So this awareness campaign is ongoing. One of the public service announcements that you alluded to shows a man who is about to step in front of a woman or step closer to her and say something, but his male buddy, his companions there, steps in front of him. That's an ideal outcome that men sort of control and contain each other and educate each other.
The strongest allies we have are our allies within the male community because, you know, unfortunately, we are working within sort of patriarchal bounds of who do we listen to, and men seem to listen to other men. So as one of the wonderful men out there who is doing good things and wants to, you know, help make the world a better place, the best thing you can do is step up, because it's really hard for the person who is experiencing abuse or catcalling to say something because they're already in such a precarious situation, that as a male friend, as an ally, as somebody who's watching and standing there, you can step in and save someone so much trouble and fear.
And how safe do women feel in our community? Can you go for a bike ride in a rural area without fear? Can you walk down a city street without fear? Is this something that's just always present?
Definitely. I think it's one of those experiences that when you talk to a woman, she may not even bring it up because it is so commonplace, until you say, but what about catcalling? And they go, oh, of course. Yeah, but that, you know, that happens. We've sort of become inured to the fact that it is so present that we use this phrase, and I'm going to quote Roxane Gay here, who's a very famous feminist. She says, not that bad, right? Women have been conditioned to say, well, it's not that bad, because we hear so many stories about how it could be worse. And so we are learning to minimize our own reactions to daily occurrences of abuse and harassment, because it could always be worse. And we should really be trying to walk that back and instead be like, it's never okay, and I always deserve respect, because I do think it is a universal experience for women. Everybody I know, all my peers, are just, it's sort of an expectation. It's a part of growing up, unfortunately. And a lot of times when things do happen, you hear the phrase, well, you shouldn't have been there. You shouldn't have been walking around at that time. Everybody knows you shouldn't go on that street at that time of night, or, you know, the classic victim blaming of what were you wearing, what were you doing? And I think because of that, we've just become so used to not accepting the experiences we go through as terrible, because it could always be worse.
Moving on to the idea of the Me Too movement, it's got a couple of years of momentum behind it, and now hopefully it's a major pivot point in our nation. Your thoughts on, let's see, the big Weinstein settlement, and then how do we take this down to street level?
So obviously we've all been hearing about how the large settlement has just happened with Weinstein, and while that's great that there is some reparation for the survivors of his abuse, really what it is allowing him to do is never accept blame for it. There's also stuff built into the settlement that say that future board members cannot be prosecuted for this, that we can't bring up charges again. And all this is basically saying is it's reiterating that we don't respect women. Even when we say, okay, we believe your story, we're saying it's still not worth that much because this person has power, this person has money. And what does that tell survivors who don't have power and money? So taking it to the street level, I personally, in my day job, get to work on the Me Too campaign in terms of immigrant workers and those of us who maybe don't have the same power and stature as those in Hollywood who are bringing up these accusations. And so on a day-to-day basis, all we can really do, and what I think is the important takeaway from the Me Too movement, is that anybody who works is at risk for facing workplace sexual harassment. And so educating, campaigns that make this information accessible, are so important. You know, providing translated materials around what do you do if you're experiencing harassment in the workplace? Where can you go? What are your state laws on it? Are there ways for you to bring this up? You know, knowing things about your HR documents. These are all things that are very easy to do, but not widely shared. And I think that's something we could start doing on a personal level, is educating ourselves and then trying to spread the news. It's the same sort of tactic I take for all women's rights movements, is it's education, right? Education is so powerful. And with information in our hands, we can try and make a difference. So a good example of this is every state has an EEOC, an Equal Opportunity Council, which is the state organization that handles workplace sexual harassment claims. So thinking about that, it's how do you access that? If you've never thought about it, why would you know the number to call? Why would you know that there's a 180-day limit on reporting workplace sexual harassment? These are the sort of things that if we make them more public, more people can reach out for help.
How do we raise young people that don't sexually harass in the workplace or anywhere else? Mm-hmm. How do we raise young girls that are wary of this and can work to overcome it? How do we raise young men who respect women of all ages?
This is a really important question, and it's a really tough one, because how do you get into a family and start making changes if it's not your own? And I do think I've seen a lot of change recently just in the level of awareness that young people nowadays have around topics like sexual assault and consent. And these are topics that even I, when I was going through high school, didn't get a chance to talk about, because we weren't thinking about it as a holistic approach. To everything was separated. It was sex education, it was respect, which we talked about only within our female groups, and then it was school in general. And I think a huge part of raising our future generations to be respectful and to understand that A, they deserve respect, but B, they need to give respect, is talking about it in the home. And obviously that can be kind of uncomfortable, but it's, I think, our responsibility as community members, as parents, as friends, as cousins, as big sisters, as whoever we are, to just kind of get over the awkwardness of it and speak about it. You know, it sounds kind of hokey to say, tell people they deserve respect, but you'd be surprised how many people don't know that. And they don't know it because it was never explicitly said to them. I also think when we started learning about things like consent, it was done separated. Boys and girls were separated out because we couldn't possibly talk about that sort of stuff together. And I don't think that's helpful. I think making it a human experience rather than a experience separated by gender is a way to make us all feel like we're aiming for the same thing and foster respect in really powerful, powerful ways.
How do we self-check ourselves to see if we are respecting other people of either gender?
Another really tough question, and something I definitely do at work, which is I lead training. So I do corporate trainings, I do organizational trainings on what we call cultural humility, which is basically thinking, how do we look internally and figure out our own biases? Because we all have them, right? That's just human nature. And I think that's the first step, is that a lot of people are very quick to respond with, well, I'm not, enter racism, sexism, whatever it is you want to say. But we all do hold these feelings. That is just the way society has made us. And so first of all, by accepting that, by saying, I do have something, I just need to figure out what it is a really difficult thing. You know, it's uncomfortable to think about, where do I hold these feelings that I know aren't right? Because a lot of times we want to push them aside and say, no, we don't feel that way. And I think honestly, the easiest way to do that is A, either by finding a training and going to it, B, by reading some of the fantastic books out there. Like I think I mentioned Roxane Gay earlier. She's got a whole series of books that will really sort of push you to think about things. Our website, Stop Street Harassment, consistently posts articles that are relevant to these happenings. I just feel like it's about reading and being very insightful, which is a very difficult thing to ask people to do. But if you're aware and you make the first step of accepting that we all hold these feelings, that's sort of the best you can do. But it is a really long and hard process, and isn't something that you can do like a one and done. It's a consistent lifelong process. Like, even though we may be in this work, even though we may be on the board of organizations like Stop Street Harassment, I myself know I hold some of these values and need to work at constantly undoing them. So I'm never going to be done, is essentially the short of it, is that I'm going to have to keep working on it. And I feel like everyone else should at least begin that process as well.
Who are some other change agents in the field of feminism or gender, you know, equality mm-hmm. or women's empowerment that we could mention?
I don't think we can really have this conversation without mentioning Tarana Burke. We have spoken about the Me Too movement, and Tarana Burke is a civil rights activist. She's from New York, and she began using the phrase Me Too in 2006 to raise awareness of sexual abuse and assault in society more generally, but also how it affected, in particular, minority women and black women. And I think she is responsible for so much, and she is still so active. I recently heard her speak when Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed to the Supreme Court. She was here leading the rally, speaking to us all, and telling us that we deserve respect even if we're not being shown it, even on a global political level. She's fantastic. I think she should be a household name at this point. And she continues to make huge strides forward for women everywhere.
Anyone else come to mind immediately?
I have to say Holly Curl, who's our founder. She's been doing fantastic work on a topic that we oftentimes overlook. I think street harassment, even when she started this organization, street harassment wasn't even a thing. Like, the concept was just, it didn't have a name, it didn't have a movement, and now it's become an international week, which is absolutely fantastic. So I couldn't be more proud to know her and to be on her board.
Anything else you'd like to mention? You kind of have an open mic here to talk about anything that's really important to the movement or to women's issues.
What I'd love to bring up is the idea of allyship. And we've touched on it several times during this interview, but basically to say that every single person here has the absolute power to be an ally. And that's huge. That's a power and a privilege that a lot of people don't get because they may be the survivor or the victim. You know, we hear statistics like globally 1 in 3 women will face sexual violence in their lifetime. And that's a pretty shocking number, because if you think about the number of women, you know, if 1 in 3 of them is going to face it, that means that you can do something about it. This is really sort of a call to action then. And, you know, being an ally doesn't mean that you have to be that person who steps in the middle of a catcaller or the person who is out there at rallies. It can be something as small as donating to local organizations that do this work. It can be volunteering at shelters that are open on days like Christmas, Thanksgiving, New Year's, all of that, to make sure that people have somewhere to go when they have been survivors. It's reaching out to your Congress people to talk about where we're sending our money in terms of local foundations and funding given to organizations that do sexual violence work. I think there are so many little ways that we can each be a good ally, and I don't think we should just think of it as you have to physically do something, like step in front of, like I said, like step into an argument or go to a rally. You can do this from the comfort of your home. We can even start, like we said, in the home and talk to your kids about something that makes you uncomfortable, because that's how we're going to see change, and that's how we're going to see a future that is free of violence.
Lauren Perez is the Outreach and Training Program Manager at the Domestic Violence Resource Project in Washington, D.C., and a board member of Stop Street Harassment. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me.